It's just like, it's just like close your eyes and pick a number, right? And then just see if people will pay it. This is $500 million. You want to pay it?
Hello and welcome to the EDH Rec Cast, brought to you by the best deck building site on the web for the Commander format, EDH Rec. My name is Joey Schultz, and I'm joined today by my lovely co-hosts. First up, the Speedster, whose article series takes you from 60 to 100. It's Matt Morgan.
Joey, I wanted to build a belt and make it out of watches, but I just figured it'd be a waste of time.
You know, I actually kind of dig that one. Sometimes I'm not sure where I fall on some of those dad jokes, but I actually really, really like that one, Matt. Next, the man whose articles remind you to look in the margins, Dana Roach.
I'm just really right now realizing that Pioneer is basically the Brawl of Standard, right?
That is an aggressive way to begin the show, Dana. That's a hot take. Anyway, I am Joey Schultz, author of the Commander Showdown series. All these articles and more can be found at edhrec.com, along with some awesome featured community content, such as other Commander podcasts and gameplay videos. EDHREC itself is a fantastic deck-building resource that compiles data from deck lists all over the internet to provide helpful recommendations for new Commander decks. And here on the podcast, we like to give all that data a little more context. Everyone, we have the esteemed honor of being joined by a most special guest. He is a connoisseur of content creation. Please welcome Mr. John Dunning.
Welcome back, Planeswalkers, to another episode. Oh, I don't have to do that right now. Hey, what's up, guys? Thank you so much for letting me on here. This is weird, stepping out of the hosting chair for once and just being a schlub on the couch. I appreciate this opportunity. This is awesome. I'm a longtime listener, and I love all you guys, so this is great.
Yeah, we are so excited to have you, because actually, you had us on your show first on your They Said, We Said YouTube channel.
Yes, that was a dream come true, having the three of you on the Hive Mind. The Hive Mind, like I think we talked a little bit about it, about the show off the air, is just, I owe everything to that show, because it allowed me so many opportunities, opened so many doors for me in the community, because I just love the community so much. That's kind of my gig. You know, you guys are very Commander-centric, which I am as well, or, you know, there's Arena players and streamers is the new hotness right now, but I like focusing on the community and the people and the community members, and that show was just such a great way to allow me to do that and to reach out to great folks like yourself and like so many others I have in the past. I'm kind of being cryptic and speaking about it as past tense, because officially the Hive Mind is on a hiatus my focus is being transferred to other things. This is kind of breaking news, I guess, for the three people that watch my channel. But the Hive Mind is going to go on a break, on an indefinite break, and I'm focusing more on the live shows and especially all the work that we're putting in with Supreme Verdict, which is the community's only live Magic debate show. So that's a ton of fun, and that's where my focus is going forward.
Well, I think definitely dropping down from six shows a week to just five is probably kind of a nice break for you as well.
When my kids say, who is that guy that's in the corner? Like, I'm like, oh, there's a problem. I might need to cut a little bit of the fat here.
Yeah, I mean, you are kind of the busiest man in Magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've had a bunch of guests on the Hive Mind. You've had Josh Lee Kwai, you've had us, you have had a bunch of folks, the Proxy Guy, Cat Light, like really big names on that show. And that's not even the only thing that you do on that show. You've also got other things like Director's Cut. You've just got a whole bunch going on that channel. So yeah, it's really, really awesome to watch you work. We were really grateful to be invited onto your Hive Mind episode. And we're also really grateful that you agreed to come onto the show with us so that we can talk a little bit about Commander 2.
Absolutely. And again, thank you guys for coming on. Onto my channel. It was a ton of fun, a great time, and then also thank you for having me now. So I am super stoked to talk Commander with you guys.
Awesome. So, you know, just to sort of let our listeners get to know you a little bit in case they haven't come across any of the 9,000 different things that you're doing on YouTube, let's just get started with a couple of warm-up questions. For example, how did you get started playing the best format in Magic, Commander?
So I started playing Magic back in, I think, Tempest was... Okay, so I started playing Magic while I want to say... Yeah, it was oh God, what's the name of a Weatherlight? Sorry. Weatherlight was the new set that was out. So, but that was more of like kitchen table and stuff. I started like sitting down at like LGS's and going to F&M's and stuff right after the release of Tempest. That was my first pre-release. So, you know, there wasn't any real Commander out then. I lived in Las Vegas at the time. So it wasn't until kind of I left the game and came back when it was M13 Innistrad and right before Return to Ravnica, that in my opinion was the best standard, but we're not here to talk about that. But that was, you know, I would show up to the F&Ms, the standard F&Ms and drafts, and there would always be that corner table of a couple of kids, you know, in a circle playing with these very large decks, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, it was like this the speakeasy type thing, and then, you know, that table turned into two, and I finally just like, okay, what is going on there? And that's eventually what I just started showing up for. It was just like, I think I built my very first deck was it had to have been Orzhov, so I think it was Taysa, little Taysa, and I just had an absolute blast, and I just fell in love with how I love non-rotating formats. I'm a big Modern fan, but I just love that I get to, you know, I'm more of a Johnny Spike, so I love that I get to put all my, everything that I liked about Magic into this giant thing, and it was just it's just a different vibe, different flavor of gameplay. I do have a competitive spirit, but I just love that kind of, that environment more.
Yeah, it's definitely really addicting once you get into it. Do you still have that Taysa deck? What commanders do you play now?
No. She's unfortunately gone by the wayside as commander decks. You know, they come and go as they do. I think, though, I don't have too many now. I'm in transition, but I attack the format usually. I'm a big tribal person, so I'll always have my Gisen Garof. That's my favorite zombie tribal, and then I have Daxos, which is a curses deck, which I did a video about. That one's a lot of fun. I play some weird wonky commanders, but I like the seeing it. Like I like playing commander like it's a challenge, you know. Seeing if I can pull off these crazy things, where I could lock out someone in a curse lock, which it's so easy to disrupt, but once you do it, you get like the little Xbox achievement sound in your brain. It's wonderful.
It's so funny that you would mention a Daxos curse deck, because just yesterday I was at a game store playing with a group of friends, and one of them was playing Daxos, and they happened to have a small number of curses in that deck. They were off to a blisteringly fast start. They had the Soul Ring into the Signet, into the, you know, turn two commander, a whole bunch of crazy stuff happening, and I just wasn't about that. So when I, playing Feather, got to the point where I could cast a removal spell, on my third turn, I Chaos Warped that Daxos, because I just didn't want to deal with what was going on over there. Any little bit of disruption would help, because it was just like, oh man, I don't want this to get snowballing out of control. Well, I Chaos Warped, which means that they get to put something into play off the top of the deck after the shuffle and yada yada. They flipped over an Overwhelming Splendor. And you can guess who they enchanted with it, the guy who just Chaos Warped the commander. They put that Aura Curse, that 8-mana thing, right onto me. It was like my third turn. And then they turned all of my creatures that I would ever have into 1/1s with no abilities. They prevented me from being able to use activated abilities unless they were Planeswalker abilities, which I and my Feather deck do not have any Planeswalkers. The entire deck hinges on Feather being a creature with an interesting ability, so that just... On my third turn, I was hoisted by my own petard. So it's so funny that you would mention Daxos Curse deck, because I was just rendered completely immobile by a Daxos Curse deck literally just yesterday. It was nasty.
It's so funny, too, because, like, it's such a... Like, people will let you kind of play around, especially with that. They'll come with their like Breas or, you know, whatever, your usual villains, right? And then I'll slap down this Daxo deck and I'll get a Curse of Death's Hold. Oh, you know, whatever, you know, this guy's playing curses, and then that starts, you know, kind of snowballing, and then you get the one that, you know, the Humility Curse, and then you do the curse. I think it was the Curse of Death's Hollow or whatever, the one that gives everything -1/-1, and then you just don't get creatures anymore, and then it's just not funny anymore for them, and that's when I start laughing. I'm not a big fan of, like, infinite loops or combos or anything like that, and I know, you know, why am I playing Commander then, but I like when it's just like this kind of Dirtle McTurtle, and then it turns into this crazy lock, and just like, oh wow, I didn't know that was a thing. That's like my favorite reaction to a deck that I play.
That's amazing. Also, Dirtle McTurtle, you need to put that on a t-shirt like yesterday. That's delightful. So I want to open the floor up. Matt, Dana, have there been any fun games in your recent Commander week?
I have not got to play, I don't think, since the last time we recorded. So the answer for me is a resounding no.
Oh, that's a shame. Matt, anything from you?
I did, actually. So I did the most Selesnya of Selesnya things ever in my career. So had out a Smothering Tithe, made a bunch of tokens, cast a Finale of Devastation for 27. And then I got out.
Oh, my goodness.
It gets better. It gets better. Brought out a Pathbreaker Ibex. And then I attacked. I happened to win the game, just in case anybody wasn't quite clear.
If you didn't win a game, were you immediately put into play a 3-3 that has an ability that turns all of your creatures into overwhelming stampede things when it attacks, that then immediately got haste and plus 27 to give all of your creatures not only regular plus 27 from the original Finale, but then an additional plus 30 from the Pathbreaker? If you didn't win that game, I would be astonished.
It was the most I've ever done through regular combat damage through without like any special pumps or infinite mana, whatever, because I had a... oh my goodness, I had one Anthem effect out as well. I think I had 13 or 14 creatures. I didn't want to do any math because math is not my specialty, despite me working in accounting.
Yikes.
But yeah, so 27 plus 27 plus a lot in numbers. And I won. That's what we need to say is I won.
Goodness, that sounds absolutely ridiculous. All right, let's move into our main topic for the show. What are we talking about today, fellas?
The main topic is the scariest commanders to play against, kind of a Halloween theme here.
Spooky.
Yeah. By the time that this show comes out, Halloween will be just around the corner. So we wanted to talk about the things that spook us in our commander games. Before we even get to, you know, the actual discussion of which commanders we find the most frightening, though, I want to ask simply, what makes a commander scary to play against? What actually makes you consider someone the archenemy, you know, upon arrival? As soon as someone flips over their commander and you see what it is, what is a quality about that commander that would make you afraid of it?
I think there's two levels to this, or the two angles to answer this up. There's the scary commanders that are scary because they're going to win. So, like, that's one aspect of being scary. Something like a Prosh, for example, is scary because you're like, I'm going to lose the game if I don't keep that deck in check every single turn. But I don't mind that much. I mean, if you lose the game, you just play another game. The ones I guess I would say I find the scariest in that I don't want to have to deal with it would be the ones that control the game or soft lock the game so you can't play Magic. I would rather lose a game to something scary like Prosh than sit there and not play Magic for an hour against something scary like Grand Arbiter. So there's two different levels of scary there. One of which is way, way worse. I'm more afraid of annoying than I am scary, I guess.
Gotcha. John, what's something that makes a commander scary for you?
Yeah, I kind of echo Dana's sentiment. Like, if someone slaps down a Feldegriff, I'm already like, oh, God, like, it's going to be that kind of a night. You know, it's just like, and conversely, it's just like, okay, you put down a Prosh or something super spiky or a Bray or something. I'm like, okay, I know what I'm in for. This person knows what they're doing, so they already are putting that target on their back. So, okay, so now we have an established arch enemy, but then you have a Zedru player, and you're just like, oh, it's so, and oh, you know, it's so fun, like, here's my stuff, and oh, this is great, you know, it's like, it's just, and then it just snowballs, and it snowballs, and then it's like, oh, yeah, and everyone's scooping up their cards, and I'm like, what are we doing? Oh, yeah, well, we lost, like, 20 turns ago. Well, why the heck are we still playing? You know, it's those kind of like, I'm going to waste all your time or like those, you know, the Karns and all that. That's when it's just like banging my head against the table. That's why I don't know. I tend to like playing with and playing against more fair decks because I like the whole building. I like the feeling of building up to something in a commander game.
Yeah, there is definitely that element. A lot of decks have the capacity to snowball definitely to really impressive board states. See beforehand where Matt mentioned Finale of Devastation for X equals 27. But, like, especially something that has, like, insurmountable speed that makes, like, an absolutely meteoric impact on the battlefield as soon as it can. it just goes off out of nowhere. That's definitely really impressive, but also the stuff that slows you down or that deprives you of resources, that's definitely really, really frightening for me as well. That makes me dread the prospect of that game because I just don't know how I'm going to get out of those very sticky situations. Matt, is there anything unique that makes something scary for you when you see it across the table, or is it also largely probably within those fears of, you know, how those commanders affect the game?
I would say it's a combination of all of those. I think the one thing for me that really stands out, though, is just how it warps the game and what's going on. Does it kind of make other players stop in their tracks and they have to shift gears? So it suddenly turns into, like John said, it becomes an arch enemy situation right away because the commander hit the battlefield. And there's a couple that I think on my personal list, they definitely do that. They warp the game. You have to address them right away. Otherwise, it's just going to get either a snowball of value or just what they're doing is going to get out of control. And I think one thing that a lot of commanders have a reputation for, and we'll talk about them too, is how are you able to interact with them or the rest of the battlefield with them around? And I think that's one thing that a lot of commander players, I think, it's a pretty common theme, I would say. You know, commander players, they want to play commander to interact, to have those experiences. And that's not to say all that. That's obviously very general. But I do think that a lot of people, they like resource accumulation. They like having all these fun, silly interactions. And so commanders that don't let that happen generally get shunned and are, you know, can be a little scary, I would say.
I definitely agree. Inability to successfully interact with someone else's game plan, strategy, commander, anything like that, that is definitely really frightening.
And absolutely. The commanders that are just real tough to interact with are kind of rough also. Like I like a lot of the gods, whether they be from Amonkhet or Theros, but just some of the ones that are just so powerful and then you can't remove them, that's the problem. Like the Scorpion God, I have no problem with because you could build a really interesting deck around that and it's not just going to win. You know, you kind of have to incrementally poke at your opponent's creatures and shut it down that way, where conversely you put the Locust God down and then or even the Scarab God and then it just kind of snowballs really quickly, or a Purphoros, and that's where it just isn't as fun because you can't, there's no great way to interact with something that's indestructible.
So it's so funny that you would mention Purphoros, because if we get into the meat of the topic now, where we each discuss our personal list of the three commanders that we are the most afraid of, number one on my list is actually the commander Purphoros. My number one commander that I'm afraid to see is going to be that mono red god that whenever creatures enter the battlefield under Purphoros's control, it deals 2 damage to everyone else. I am so afraid of seeing that across the table from me, precisely because it turns the clock on the game that I expected. It cuts it in half, if not into fourths. It is so blisteringly fast, and there's almost no chance that I'll be able to get rid of it, and just completely upsets the entire pace of the game before we've even gotten started. That is a terrifying one for me. So it's funny that you would mention Purphoros, because yeah, that resonates very much with me. It's going to make things very, very fast, and I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to keep up.
Well, and with Purphoros, you mentioned being unable to interact. Not only is Purphoros tough to remove, being a enchantment creature with indestructible, you probably need some kind of an exile effect, assuming it's a creature, which oftentimes those Purphoros decks, it never turns into a creature because they're making tokens.
Right.
So you're like, well, I hope someone's running Return to Dust or Deglamour or something, or Purphoros is there forever. But the second layer of uninteractability there is you can't just board wipe away that problem because the damage is being dealt by the creatures coming into play. So it's not even a situation like an elf ball deck where you're like, well, they don't have haste, so I've got to turn to, you know, maybe top deck a board wipe or something. You're just taking damage. Like there's just so few ways to respond to that deck that, yeah, I get it. That's really frustrating.
Yeah. So Dana, what's on your list? What's the commander that you're afraid to see across the table?
One of the ones I will mention is Marisol the Pretender. And this would go into the annoying category, because I have to then mentally somehow keep track of that uncommon from Mercadian Masks that you have exiled on it to get one ability, and then you just exile some common from Stronghold and then a common from, you know, Fallen Empires, and I need to keep track of those three cards and what abilities you have, and it turns into a soft lock eventually anyway, but it's a soft lock using creature abilities that are just a real annoying thing to try to like remember is happening in the game right now. So it's a deck that,
very unfamiliar.
Yeah, well, I mean, it creates a soft lock, which is, you know, preventing you from playing sometimes, but it's also just mentally irritating to me.
Trying to keep track of all that stuff. Yeah. John, how about you? What's one of the scary commanders on your list?
We talked about him a little bit, but Prosh, like I said, you kind of know what you're getting against a Prosh deck. It's just like, okay, what round am I going to lose in? Am I going to lose in, you know, turn four, turn five? Maybe that's even too generous for a Prosh deck, a well-tuned Prosh deck. I feel like Prosh is, it's just so good. It's too good. And even if it doesn't have the rest of the 99 supporting it, like, you could play a Prosh deck out of the box and still compete with high-level tuned decks. And, I mean, that's a cool thing. That's a great thing for new players because, you know, for someone that doesn't have the time or just getting into the format, you know, you could crack that open. And that was kind of the point for these pre-con decks anyways. But I think that just that commander in itself, and, you know, you could remove Prosh, but then every time, you know, it comes back, it's just that much worse. So I think that that's the one that's probably the scariest to play against, because there's no getting your bearing, especially if you're playing more of a dirtily game or you're playing more of a controlly game or even a mid-range game. It's just like, I don't have time to draw into my thing to get rid of all your crap. So it's a tough one to play against.
Yeah, that's actually a really key thing that you point out there. Even if you get rid of Prosh, he's already made all of the kobolds when they cast him, first of all, but also they'll just be able to recast him and make even more kobolds, which they'll then use effects like Purphoros or Impact Rammers to take advantage of, or, you know, heaven forbid, a food chain combo or something like that. And a friend of mine actually has a Rakdos the Showstopper deck that I also have similar feelings of dread against. It's not on my top list that I'm afraid of that commander necessarily, but I am afraid of getting rid of his commander whenever he has it in play. He will actually himself try and find ways to remove Rakdos from the field so that he can play it again and then use its effect again, because it has such a really big impact on the board when he casts it, when it comes in and destroys half of everyone else's stuff. Prosh is definitely right up there because it has a huge effect. It can make seven bodies as soon as it enters. That is terrifying stuff. That is a very, very big impact, and it can make even more when it comes back later. Yeah, that's, talk about interaction. That's really, really rough. All right, Matt, what's on your list?
I'm going to stick with the Jund Dragon as well, actually. So I'll build off what John said. I played against a Korvold deck for the first time this weekend, and it was incredibly scary, actually. It was just crazy how the, you know, the Korvold player could just kind of do a little bit, but got a lot in return. It took almost zero effort to turn a lot of what they had going on into more value. And then they played a kind of ho-hum card, and they got more value. And then they did a little bit more, and they got even more value. And it was just, it was so crazy because we sat down and they said, okay, I literally built this deck between dinner and coming to the store. It's just what I had laying around. I haven't bought any cards for it. And it still was just crazy powerful what they were able to do with just a very stock list. And they weren't playing anything super crazy powerful. They weren't playing, you know, Dictative Erebos and Grave Pact, any effects like that. But just what they were able to do, just recurring things, just Journey to Eternity is amazing in Korvold decks. And just all that incidental little value. And then, oh, by the way, they have a 24-24 Flying Dragon that's going to come after you really quick. It's just,
That's the real cherry on top, isn't it, with Korvold?
And I don't think the player ever went below five cards in hand. Like, just everything Korvold does and all the text on there, it just means we had to stop what we were doing. Like, there was an Edgar Markov deck at the table getting ready to spew vampires to and fro. But no, we have to watch over this Korvold because Korvold's going to do some very dirty things and we're not going to do very well in this game. So just how well just playing Korvold without doing anything else warped the battlefield was just, it just commanded so much attention right off the bat.
Yeah, everything you sacrifice gets him bigger, draws them cards. They can sacrifice lands really easily. They can sacrifice tokens really easily. That thing is its own source of aggressive commander damage and card advantage. That is so much in one card. I would also likewise be afraid of seeing that across the table. Yeah. All right, Dana, I'm going to throw it back to you. What is the number two commander on your list of scary, scary commanders?
Grand Arbiter Augustin. And I would also kind of throw Gaddock Teague in that list right next to him. Basically just commanders that make it so it's difficult for you to play Magic.
Yeah, he's the one that taxes other people. All of the spells will cost one more, but Grand Arbiter's spells will cost one less.
Yes.
That's a tiny amount, but that adds up a lot.
And it's not just the commander in those cases. It's not just the Grand Arbiter's really annoying. It's that the Grand Arbiter deck is also running, you know, H10 counter spells probably, and it's also running a bunch of Hate Bears, generally speaking, whenever I've played against those decks. It's a real tight control strategy, and usually the problem with control in Commander is you can't control three other players. You just don't have enough gas to do it. But the spell reduction on Grand Arbiter and the tax on everybody else makes it way easier to do so, and it makes it easy to do it really, really slowly over the course of 14 or 18 turns of everyone else doing as little as humanly possible as you grind out some sort of chip damage win or eventually draw into a combo.
Or like an Approach of the Second Sun or something. Yeah,
yeah.
If Purphoros cuts the game timer in half, Grand Arbiter doubles it.
Yeah, and it doubles it in a way. It's not just doubling the game. It's doubling the game while limiting what you're doing. I mean, everyone's phones are out because they're just like, well, I'm, you know, play my one spell and pass a turn. If I get to play and it doesn't get countered. Yeah, it's just it leads to a really unfun game state most of the time.
Ouch. Yeah, I the same friend that I have who has a Rakdos deck, he at one point also had a Grand Arbiter deck, and both of those are pains to play against. I think that I'm a little bit more afraid of the Grand Arbiter deck, though, because it actually might mean that I don't get to play Magic, and that, well, it's sad, but it's also definitely scary. Definitely scary indeed. John, let's throw it back to you. What's another commander on your list of super scary?
Well, one that's not on my list officially, but kind of a honorable mention just because Dana made me remember it, and this is one that I actually played a lot. This is probably my most unfair mean deck was Athreos, and we're talking about scary. I mean, there's aesthetically that guy's looks a little rough. Anyways, you know, he's guarding the dead, so of course he needs to dress the part. But I again the incremental, it looks so innocuous too. I remember everyone was, I think Athreos was the last god spoiled. And everyone, once it came out, and of course I was totally amped for it because being an Orzhov player, and then everyone saw it and they're just like, oh, it's like a Punisher mechanic kind of, but I'm like, no, this is going to be awesome. And then, like Matt said, you put in those Dictative Ereboses and Grave Pact things and it just gets out of control really fast. So it's a ton of fun. But the next official one would be Necrosar. Again, it's another one like Prosh where you're just like, oh, this is what kind of night we're going to have. It's the opposite of a Feldegriff or the group slug, but it's not, it's a group slug in a way where you're not even playing Magic. It's like a mixture. It's a horrible, like unholy marriage between Grand Arbiter where you don't get to play Magic and something that, you know, a group slug deck, because everyone's constantly tossing their hands in the toilet. Nothing could get settled up. Even the player playing Necrosar doesn't even like playing it. And I was that jerk that wanted to make it work for so long. I had all the windmill effects, and I'm just like, no one here is having fun. So, you know, it's a cool, I'm glad, it's one of those cards that I'm glad it exists because another card doesn't do that, if that makes sense. Like, for the people, the sadistic people out there that enjoy that type of gameplay, this is the card for you. I'm not going to sit at that table because you're weird, but I'm still, you know, glad that it's a thing.
Dude, there are like 2,100 Necrosar decks on EDH Rec, and that's after we've moved to like just the data drawing within the past 2 years. So there used to be even more. Clearly, people like playing it. You better watch out because you just called them all sadistic.
11% of the population are sociopaths, Joey. I mean, that's just mad.
That's what? Oh my goodness.
It's just science.
Oh my god. I am also, I have good cause to be afraid of a Necrosar deck as well. And actually, just in our previous episode, we were going over threat assessment and different other commanders there, which is kind of what inspired this particular show topic, actually. But yeah, Dana, you also registered that the Necrosar player, regardless of what everyone else was doing, was also going to be the one that draws the most attention for you, too, because of the way that deck plays out.
Yeah, it went out of nowhere. That's something that I always try to deal with, because you're just going to lose if you don't. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that win out of nowhere thing is also something that I think ties into my next scary commander, and that's Breya, Aetherium Shaper. I am terrified of seeing Breya because I guess really what I can say is that I don't know what she's thinking, and that scares me a little bit.
So it's blank eyes.
Breya is capable. Yeah, Bray is capable of probably the most number of infinite combos within the game, which means I don't know which one to aim at to try and get rid of, to try and stop off, to try and prevent someone from doing. She might be doing some type of infinite combo thing to get infinite mana to then do infinite damage or gain infinite life or just have a bunch of tokens or something like that. But then there's also a bunch of other stuff that artifacts are capable of doing, even without her being involved in the mix using her sacrifice ability or her token generation. Like, there's just so much that Breya is capable of doing, and it involves her sacrificing stuff, which means I won't be able to even exile it if I want to. That is a deeply terrifying prospect, and the sheer infinity nature of her is what makes her so terrifying to me, and that explosiveness that she can do it from basically out of nowhere makes her very, very scary when I see her across the table. I'm not going to call the Breya players sadistic the way that John did, but I am going to call them scary.
Hey, I, you know, call a pig a pig. What do you want me to say?
The one defense here, Joey, I will offer of Breya is, I would say at least when I lose to a Breya deck, I feel like the person has had to do a bunch of things. Like, they found three or four pieces and put them all together in some combo that wins the game. That at least generally tends to make me a little bit less salty, or it's a little bit less scarier to me than maybe the Prosh player, who I feel like the pieces are just, you just need one card of the, you know, 10 in the deck that just auto win. And it seems like it's much more on rails than most Breya decks, despite the fact that she is undoubtedly crazy, crazy strong.
Yeah, very, very much. All right, Matt, who's the number two on your list?
The number two on my list is one that checks a lot of boxes that we've talked about, not being able to interact, not being able to, you know, go about your day because they require so much attention. But Narset Enlightened Master is my next pick. Narset's a Jeskai commander that has First Strike and Hexproof, so it's already hard to interact with. But the ability, whenever Narset attacks, you get to exile the top four cards of your library and then cast non-creature spells for free. It just warps so much that's going on. Like, Narset is definitely one of those commanders, kind of like what Dana thinks of Nekusar, where once she hits the board, the game just is going to end very, you know, very quickly. You may not get another untap step. Either you have to counter Narset or find a way to get rid of Narset before that first attack step, because you may not ever get to do anything else because they are taking those turns. You know, you look at the average Narset deck, it's a lot of solitaire, and I am very guilty. I used to have a Narset deck myself, and it was solitaire. It was, I'm going to exile all of your permanents with Karn, and I'm going to wipe the board with, you know, Ugin the Spirit Dragon and do all these crazy things and cast time stretches for free. Narset is just very not fun to go against because she does so many things that are so hard to interact with. And it's just, if you maybe pick off one extra turn spell, you might stand a chance, but the odds are very, very slim that that's going to happen.
I do want to kind of delineate thing. You mentioned not fun in the case of Narset, but not all of the examples that, you know, we'll draw upon here are necessarily commanders that we think aren't fun. We're just terrified to see them because it means that we're just going to have to completely alter what we were planning on doing in a way that not, you know, necessarily every commander we see is going to completely terrify us. So, like, there is kind of, you do run into commanders that have strategies that maybe, you know, make it a little bit more aggravating or something like that, and make it sometimes can create a frustrating experience. But also some of these, like, I'm not necessarily going to be irked or something if I see a Breya across the table, but I am going to keep my eye on her. That's definitely what I'm going to do, because just she's capable of so much.
Yeah, like I said, I had a Narset deck of myself, and sometimes it is powerful to, you know, turn those dials up on the power level a little bit, and that's kind of where Narset makes her home. Is if you guys are trying to do something super crazy powerful with your playgroup, then Narset's a great option. It's just something that, you know, you probably want to be playing commanders that are equally as scary to go against. Otherwise, your playgroup, there might be a little bit of an imbalance, unless you like having that imbalance and you like being the archenemy, because a lot of these commanders are a good way to do that, because just the way they impact the board, if your playgroup is doing some threat assessment like we did last week, they're probably going to identify Narset as something that needs to be addressed pretty quickly.
Yeah, the phrase, why is everyone attacking me, is one the Narset player should never, ever utter in sincerity. Like, no. That's just what's going to be happening, and you need to be ready for it.
All right, that was really funny. Dana, sort of dovetailing off that, do you want to hit us up with your third and final pick on your scary commander's list?
My last pick is General Tazri, but you could also probably lump Captain Sisse in here, or even Yasan, Wanderer Bard. And that would be any of those commanders that have a tutor ability. Number one, because they tend to play pretty linearly. They go for the same target, which is usually a target that then chains into a win. So you're comboing a commander that is going to do that one thing and probably have a really good chance to just win the game off doing that thing. And it's also a commander that's going to do the same thing every single time. So it doesn't always lend itself to the most interesting experience to play against. So I just have to, I feel like when you're sitting down and you're seeing a Sisse there or seeing that Tazri there, you kind of can't let the person, you know, get their commander successfully fired off that ability, or you're probably going to lose. There's a bit of a Narsa thing going on there, or the Nekuzar thing we talked about, where if you play Magic, I'm just going to lose the game. So I kind of have to keep you from playing Magic.
Yeah, man, I can't believe myself, but General Tazri is a commander that I just did not give the time of day when I first saw that card. I was just like, oh, it searches up an ally, and then it's got this weird activated ability. I'm not really sure that I'm afraid of that. Allies are cute from Zendikar, but they don't have that much of a big impact on the board, do they? Well, then I played against General Tazri, and someone used a Rite of Replication on their Halimar Excavator, which milled everyone else out with so much math that I couldn't even do it. It felt like Matt, where he just like, math? No, I can't do that math. It was just so many triggers that I just really completely underestimated. It got really, really, really gross really fast. And the tutor ability on that, I can definitely see why that's so terrifying, because it means that they've got a plan and they're going to go do it.
Well, and if they don't have a plan, then they're just somebody who's tutoring every turn, which isn't a lot of fun to play against either.
That can also be a lot. Yeah.
If you're playing a five-color deck, you're going to be tutoring with your lands, too. So it's just like you're constantly just shuffling the entire time.
John, let's throw it back to you. Who's the number three on your
list? This one is more of a personal pick, and I don't think a lot of people would agree with me, but I had this guy named Brian in my play group back in Vegas. And he had – I knew I was in trouble when he slaps down – you know, turn one, he slaps down a beta – Island signed by Mark Poole. I'm like, oh god, like this person is very invested in this thing that he's making. And so, and like as soon as he starts playing and shuffling up and everything, you know, this was my first time at this play group, and I look around and everyone's like, oh god, here we go. And I'm like, oh geez, like what's going on? And this is the Maelstrom Wanderer, and this is just post-traumatic stress from playing against this particular deck, because Maelstrom Wanderer, conversely, arguably, is a fair deck, right? It's not, but you know, cascade again. All your creatures are fast and have hasties. You know, it's a 7/5, so it's just like this is the epitome of a snowball. Like the Maelstrom Wonder is a snowball. Cascading is snowballing. It's just such incremental things, and everyone, like, you all have to like sit around and just have like gentlemen agreements, even with your enemies, just like, we can't let the Maelstrom Wanderer player live past turn 20, because then you're just doing the biggest things over and over again all the time, and probably conversely, like turn 10 you shouldn't let him live. It just looks like the mana cost on it is so crazy, and it's like, you know, there's no evasion, there's no reason you can't remove it, but like just play against a real tuned up Maelstrom Wanderer deck and you're just like, oh, this is what EDH can do. Like you're in the right color combo to ramp, to have just crazy big creatures, and you have blue there too to kind of back that all up. It's just, it's an insane deck to play against, and it's really an experience.
And one of the really insane things about Maelstrom Wanderer, too, is that the cascaded spells resolve before Maelstrom Wanderer actually resolves. So if they cascade into something like a Jokal Hops or something like that, which gets rid of everything in play, and then the Maelstrom Wanderer is the thing that hits the field, It'll be the only thing in play because all the lands are gone and the artifacts are gone and the creatures are gone. And then Maelstrom Wanderer is like, I've got 7 power and haste. I'll deal 7 to you and then to you and then you and then you. And then you're just stuck commander damaged out of the game because Maelstrom Wanderer got rid of all of your stuff and is blisteringly fast.
It makes
I've played
the whole
against
table,
that one too, and it definitely resonates.
It makes the whole table feel like chumps. We're just like, how did we just lose against this thing that costs like 9 mana or whatever? It's like, there's no way that we should have just let this happen, but we did, and there was nothing we could do against it.
Well, and it has that same peripherals problem too, where, again, how do you stop that from happening, the way the cascade triggers work, because it's on a cast. It's not like you can just stop the commander from coming into play. They want to recast it to get it again anyway, so it's not like removal is really an option. So it's the kind of thing that becomes really, really challenging to keep from having it go off all game mm-hmm. long.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Matt, your number three. Hit us up.
So my number three, actually, it's fairly physically intimidating. It's pretty gross looking. It's pretty scary. But the Gitrog monster is my third one. The Gitfrog, if you will. I mean, he has like an arm dingle dangling from his mouth. Mm. Pretty spooky. But statistically, we did some analysis a while back, and we found that Gitrog monster decks had the most overlap and were statistically the least variance based commander deck in the database of all the decks that we see. And what we saw in that average deck list was not very polite either. There was a lot of land destruction. There was a lot of just grind out, just blow up everything, then, you know, happen to have a combo finish. So Gitrog monsters just tend to be built very cutthroat. And just, that's another one of those commanders that they demand your attention, because if you don't take care of what's going on there, you know, the Gitrog monster, they sacrifice lands and draw cards because they sacrifice lands, but they're playing extra lands, but then they also just keep drawing cards because they're sacrificing those lands. So they accrue so many resources themselves, but they also have a tendency to make sure you don't get any resources because they're playing wasteland and strip mines and making sure that you don't have very many resources in play. So how they just navigate the typical game, if you look at the average deck list, it means they are going to make sure that they have more resources from you because you don't have any resources yourself. And that type of gameplay, just, man, it's hard to move forward a regular game plan if you want to play, you know, any spells, because you need your mana to do that.
Yeah. Gitrog is one of those decks, too, that runs Kozilek, the Great Distortion, not with the intent of ever casting Kozilek, but with the intent of it winding up in the graveyard so that they can shuffle their graveyard back into the library to continue comboing by putting more lands into the graveyard so that they can draw more cards and get more cards in hand and then continue combos that way so that they don't deck themselves out. That's how much they will draw with the Gitrog trigger effect when they're doing those types of combos. Definitely a scary thing when they're playing an Eldrazi, not to hit you with it, but to continue a combo. That can definitely be terrifying. Last one on my list, it doesn't have a name, but I'm just sort of calling it that one obscure commander you've never seen in your life, but they're wielding it with a lot of confidence and bravado, which means they probably know some weird combo that you don't know how to prevent. Like, that's just a whole, I don't know, every so often someone will sit down with something I've just never heard of, like Asmira Holy Avenger, or when someone flips over an Axelrod Gunnarsson, I'm just like, okay. I don't know what this is. This is a very obscure thing that was printed probably before I was born, which means I don't know what you're doing, which means I don't know how to stop it. So that just makes them very, very wary in my eyes.
I mean, let's be real. Embercleave was printed before you were born, so.
John, in case you don't know, Matt loves to make jokes about my age at my expense. It has become a time-honored tradition. He also tells dad jokes even though he's not a dad, so we're weird on this show is the main takeaway.
So Joe, you're trying to tell me that you wouldn't trust me when I slap down my Taysa Envoy of Ghost decks? That's Big Booty Taysa? Come on.
At least I've heard of that one.
But no one plays it, but it makes for such a fun deck. I am totally in that bucket of people that you're kind of odd with, because, yeah, I love, like, where else can you have a 7 casting cost commander that everyone has just like written off, but then you just throw, everything's a rattlesnake, everything's an entangler, and you just like funnel everything into her, and then she has protection from creatures, so then you just have this like clear path to victory. It's so much fun. I love decks like that where it's just like, God, that is the worst. Like, why are you playing that? And then and then they're saying that while they're shuffling up for game two.
Here's actually the thing that sort of strikes me. I mean, we just listed off 3 commanders that we're afraid of seeing across the table, but multiple times it was noted that we've personally built these commanders before. Like, John, you mentioned you've had a Nikusar deck. I have actually had a Gitrog deck before I turned it into Lord Windgrace. Matt, I think you said that you had one of the commanders on your list as well. I can't remember. Narset, that's right. So, like, these are actually commanders that we've played before. So, again, it's not to cast judgment on the people who play these commanders. It's just that we've seen what they can do, and that makes us just shaken in our boots because of how scary we know they
can
be.
Keep your friends close, your enemies closer.
I'm well adjusted.
Oh, have you not built any of the commanders you're afraid of?
I don't think so. Not yet. No one's mentioned anything that I've built. So,
not yet. That's not the operative word.
He's taking notes tonight. Right. Yeah.
Alrighty, so now I actually kind of want to move into something a bit more on the Halloween theme. We talked about commanders that we're afraid of mechanically, but what about the scariest looking commanders? What are the commanders that have art that scares us visually? Get in the Halloween spirit, guys. What is a commander whose art freaks you out?
The first one I will mention, and I like the art, but it's absolutely creepy, and that's God Eternal Kefnet.
Mm.
And it's
the skeleton bird.
The skeleton bird. There's a lot of like plague doctor vibe going on, and plague doctors are absolutely terrifying. It's a great piece of art, and it looks super cool, and it's ridiculously creepy, I think.
Yeah, skeleton birds. Although I gotta say that one doesn't get to me quite as much as Aminatu the Fate Shifter. Seb McKinnon does a lot of fantastic work, but none of them leave me as unsettled as Aminatu's eyes. Just her eyes staring deep within the recesses of my soul. Seeing that one across the table, she's always looking at me, you guys, no matter which way I turn. It's like one of those paintings. No matter where you are, if you go left or right, she's always staring right at you. She knows exactly.
The silence in that card very, is deafening. Like, Seb McKinnon captured the sound of silence, and not the song, but the actual... devoid of sound feeling in that card's art so well.
Yeah, I mean, one of my...
That's an old Simon and Garfunkel tune from Well Before You Were Born. We'll explain it to you later on.
Thank you very much. Simon and Garfunkel is one of my favorite music artists. How dare you assume I don't know
We'll tell
that.
You when you're 12.
The age jokes come from all sides this episode. Right. All right, John, what is a commander that visually freaks you out? What is something that you'd be afraid to see on Halloween?
Chandler from Homeworlds. I mean, he looks just like Chandler from Friends. He looks just like Matthew Perry. It's creepy how accurate. No, I'm just kidding. I would say Child of Alara. I mean, it's a ghost baby with a skeleton arm coming out of the ground. What the? Expletive. It's terrible. I'm a father of four, and... if any of those, my children, were birthed like that, I would throw them back.
Oh, my goodness.
In the words of Ariana Grande, thanks. Next.
I was not prepared for that. Matt, can you please tell us the commander you're afraid of?
So the commander I'm afraid of probably is going to be Cedrus the Traitor King, just on account that he looks like the bass player from Gwar. He's got the big horns. Getting ready to like slap some bass. It looks like you see him at some festival and just, I'm going to walk on this side of the street right now. Man, just everything that's going on there. He's got the big zombie, long teeth, everything going on there, man. It's pretty gnarly to see. And just his massive, I don't know if it's a staff or a mace or what, but it looks like he's holding it down around like bass waist level even. So when he starts like kicking some mad licks at you better watch out.
Goodness, this was the best question I've ever asked. I'm so glad we're doing this show, you guys. I've got one more commander that visually freaks me out that I find like actually unsettling, and that's Ishkanah Graf Widow, because it is a legendary spider, and I know that the entire deck is going to be full of spiders, and I don't want a deck that is full of spiders. I do not want spiders here. Please no, please no. I know that people wanted their spider tribal, but just please no. That's another one that really gets me. Any other scary looking commanders for you guys that get you into the Halloween spirit?
Autumn Willow.
So normal.
But no, she looks like
I'm
a nice
afraid
lady.
Of Sigarda, you guys. Come on.
Because you're terrified of farmers markets, Matt.
I am.
Like a real answer to this question, probably Elish Norn. I mean, she looks just like a Cenobite straight out of Hellraiser. I mean, that's, not having skin but porcelain instead. That's pretty messed up.
I think Kirik falls into that Hellraiser vibe too.
Yeah.
Yeah, actual definitely. Dana? Any ones from you?
No, you guys covered them all. That's everything from me.
Are you trying to flex right now and say, no, I'm not scared of anything. Art doesn't creep me out. You guys are babies. Is that what you're trying to do right now?
I mentioned as a commander I don't like to play against, but Marisil, the Pretender, is also some pretty creepy art, for sure.
Yeah, it's just Dana the just right level of camp and creep. Yeah.
And I'll throw one more out there. Hadzer the Abbot.
Yeah.
out of Homelands.
Yeah. See, Homelands.
Because the guy, it's very clearly a body that no longer has a brain in it. It's just an empty husk of an old dying man. It's sad and really, really creepy. Yeah.
Experimental crash. There's no shampoo that's going to get rid of that thing.
Yeah.
Wow, that is one of those commanders, again, that I've never heard of. So if I see it across the table, they're going to be doing something weird and combo-y that I don't know how to prevent. So that scares me, too, on that front as well. All right, now that we're done talking about the scary things, let's move on to challenge some statistics. There are a lot of stats here on EDH Rec, but we don't always agree with them. Sometimes we think that cards are more or less popular than we think that they ought to be. So we like to challenge those stats here on this segment. Matt, you want to hit us up with your challenge this week?
I sure can. So my challenge stats is going to come from Korvold decks. I played against one this weekend. I talked about how spoopy they are. So I'm going to challenge the stats in these decks, too. So Korvold is currently being played in 491 decks, and there aren't very many at all. It's not showing up on the page at all. I have two, actually. I have a double whammy for you. It's Ichor Wellspring and Mycosynth Wellspring. So both of those cards are played in less than 5,000 decks each. But Mycosynth Wellspring is an artifact for two that says when it enters the battlefield or is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you may search your library for a basic land, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. It's currently being played in 3,500 decks. And then Ichor Wellspring is kind of the same thing. It is a 2-mana artifact. When it enters the battlefield or is put in the graveyard from the battlefield, you draw a card. Currently being played in 5,300 decks. But that's not very many. It doesn't show up on the page at all. And they're basically artifacts that you want to sacrifice. And Korvold makes you sacrifice things. So why not sacrifice things when, you know, you want to sacrifice those artifacts? So Korvold decks, they're all about accruing value, getting just so much that you just can't keep up. And those two artifacts are two very good ones that feed into what Korvold is doing whenever he makes you sacrifice a permanent, put a counter on him, and then you draw a card. I mean, you sacrifice one of the Wellsprings, you draw an extra card, or you put a land into your hand. It's free ramp, basically. So both of those artifacts are not showing up on the page at all for Korvold, and I think that is dead wrong.
That's a really interesting one. Usually you see them in artifact-centric strategies, but Korvold gives you that sacrifice outlet, so I can totally see the extra value there. Absolutely. My challenge this week is going to be in a Feather the Redeemed deck. I mean, it is kind of just a card in general that I think that people should be playing, but it is really, really darn good here, too. I'm talking about Pyroblast. This is the 1-mana instant that will counter target spell if it's blue or destroy target permanent if it's blue. That is such an off-the-wall thing that people do not expect. Who expects someone to get their Cyclonic Rift countered by a single red mana? I tell you what, absolutely no one. There are actually two cards in this camp. There's Pyroblast and there's Red Elemental Blast. Red Elemental Blast is basically the same, but it has a slightly different wording, which can be important. Red Elemental Blast destroys a blue permanent or counters a blue spell. And that actually kind of can matter, because you can cast the Pyroblast on something that isn't actually blue in case you need the spell trigger. One of the reasons I think it would be so good in a Feather deck is because she runs Sunforger in about 75% of her decks, and being able to go fetch up a counter-target Cyclonic Rift or counter-target counter-spell effect with a Sunforger whenever you need it, that's really, really powerful. But beyond that, Feather is also really famous for running things like Gutter Snipe or Young Pyromancer, Electrostatic Field, Monastery Mentor, all these things that trigger off of casting spells. So you can actually use that Pyroblast, target one of your own things. It won't destroy it, but you can still target your own creature. It won't destroy it because it's not blue, and then you can put that spell back in your hand, and that can be a really clean way to get a lot of extra spell triggers. So even if you don't have a blue opponent that you can use the Pyroblast against, you still have a use for that spell. It's a great out of left field thing for people to do to get rid of a really scary blue spell, and it's a great way to get some extra storm triggers off with those electrostatic field effects too. It's done great work for me in Feather, but only 100 people so far are playing it in Feather decks out of her nearly 1,400 decks. So I'm challenging that one. I think that it should see way more play for Feather because of all those different cool uses. All right, Dana, what's your challenge?
My challenge is a card from Dissension called Elemental Resonance. It is an aura for 4-mana, 2 green-green that says, at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, add mana equal to enchanted permanent's mana cost to your mana pool. And I think this is underplayed in both Ural decks and Sigarda Host of Hurons decks. It's only in 231 decks total, just from, you know, the beginning. But in those decks where it's really difficult to interact with a commander who would be wearing that aura, and the deck tends to also want to run as many auras as possible, Sigarda's oftentimes an Enchantress deck, and Ural definitely is, because Ural himself gets +2/+2 off enchantments. you know, you could be running a Gilded Lotus that just makes you mana for ramp, or you could run Elemental Resonance that's going to be much harder to remove as it's attached to this Hexproof Commander. It's going to also fuel your Ancestral Mask and your Ethereal Armor, and it's going to get you 5 mana every single turn without having to tap it or do anything. It's just going to make that mana from the get-go. So I don't think it wants to be in a ton of decks, but I think in a deck where your commander is difficult to remove, like Sigarda or Ural, or maybe even something like Kruphix, if you're playing an enchantment deck using Kruphix or something, because it is indestructible, I think that's a really, really solid card, and it should be in more than 231 decks.
Man, I really like this one. This is a card I just completely forgot existed. I played back in Original Ravnica, and I just don't even remember this one very well. Talk about scary artwork, though. Elemental Resonance has some creepy-looking artwork, too. All right, John, you want to hit us up with your challenge to round it out?
Yeah, so I don't have any like stats behind my pick, and mine's actually what I feel is an underplayed and underutilized commander. And what me personally, when I am building a new commander deck, I tend to get my inspiration from movies, because I review movies, and you know, I'm very cinematically focused, and I just got done watching with my son the Dark Crystal Age of Resistance, and that is a fantastic watch for anyone that's Jim Henson or Dark Crystal fans. This is a perfect series. It couldn't have been better than if Jim Henson got reanimated and such poor taste, but he came back and actually, you know, directed it himself. But anyways, so I am inspired to bring back my Sidisi Brew Tyrant deck. And I think that, because I was sitting there thinking, I'm like, what commander is like a Skeksis? I want a Chamberlain deck. And I think that the, like, Sidisi Brew Tyrant, yes, she's a Naga Shaman. I wish there was like a bird reptile or something. I'm sure if you look down the Simic legendary creatures, there might be, but I don't have time to look at that. I know I like Sidisi Brew Tyrant. 4 casting costs, 1 black, green, blue for a 3/3. Whenever Sidisi Brew Tyrant enters the battlefield or attacks, put the top 3 cards of your library into your graveyard. Whenever one or more creature cards are put into your graveyard from your library, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. So it's a self-mill zombie horde deck. You put Mesmeric Orb in here, and it gets really crazy really fast. It's a ton of fun because you put yourself on this weird clock of, am I going to mill myself out or am I going to set myself up for these huge, huge plays? And even if it kind of sputters out or they get rid of one of your big integral pieces, then you're still going to have it still, you know, kind of boils down to being a zombie tribal deck as well. And I like I said before, I love my Gisen Garof deck, and I think that is the best pure zombie tribal commander, but adding green brings out a whole other element. You got a lot of the like the Ravnica and RTR trolls, zombie trolls that you could add, you know, adding a lot of the Golgari to it, not just having a strictly Dimir zombie list. It's just a ton of fun, and I don't like I never played against anyone that had a Sidisi Brew Tyrant deck, and I wondered why. And there's other commanders that if you want to get real spiky, you could just do like Ghoul Caller Geesa or something like that. If you are going tribal and especially going zombie, there are, I guess, faster ways to victory. But if you just want to have a really great time and a kind of unconventional time, I think this is one that you should definitely look into and definitely pick up.
So my instinct here is to kind of like josh around with you a little bit, because Sidisi Brood Tyrant is the 3rd most popular Sultai commander and like the 27th most popular commander like ever. So I'm kind of like, oh, you know, come on. That's not really seeing not enough play. There's 1,600 decks for Sidisi. But at the same time, like 3rd most popular of the Sultai commanders, and Yarok the Desecrated is already rising in the ranks despite its recency, and it's got 1,100 decks to its name, which means Sidisi is technically going to be moving down that list. So other things like Muldrotha, Tassigur, and Yarok are kind of co-opting the space that she used to inhabit near the top of that list. So, like, technically there's room for her to improve, but she's also, like, pretty near the top already. It is definitely a frightening thing to behold there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I came from, I was playing more of the old school, like, Mimeoplasm decks and
Mimeo.
They're
my
great.
Boy.
And then, but I never played, you know, statistics or whatever. I played in some pretty big groups in a couple different states. I never sat across the table from a CDC deck, and I always wondered why. But I guess I'm just not in the right boroughs.
Or are you in exactly the right boroughs? Because CDC is also one of those commanders that looks pretty darn scary when you start analyzing her artwork.
At least she doesn't wind up like a necklace like the other guy.
Oh, yeah. Like Tasigur? Yeah. That, oh, man, talk about scary things. That's a great piece to wear for Halloween there, folks. Get yourself a Tasigur necklace. All right. So to wrap up, John, I just want to give you the opportunity to also mention where folks can find you. What are your social media coordinates? What are the different avenues that folks can find your content?
Absolutely. Again, thank you three so much for inviting me on. This was a ton of fun, an absolute dream come true. This is crazy. Like being on EDH Rec podcast is just amazing. So thank you all for allowing me to be here. You could find me, you could talk movies or magic with me. I have kind of a 50-50 YouTube channel. You can find that on YouTube at They Said We Said, or find me on Twitter is the best place to reach me at Orzov Dunn. But I don't think we broke the news yet. You guys are actually, or at least some of you are actually returning to the channel very soon next month. The second team battle for Supreme Verdict, which is the live debate show, and it's going to be Team EDH Rec versus Team Jake and Joel are Magic, and who are the three? I'll let you guys say who's going to compete in that one.
Yeah. So it was so much fun to be on your Hive Mind episode 2, which happened a couple of months back. So that was just a great experience, too. Don't worry, listeners. We'll put that link into the show notes for you as well. Yeah, it will definitely be me. And as I understand it, Matt, you will be joining as well.
I will. I'll be making my return to the Supreme Verdict. I didn't do as well as I liked. I came into a immovable object in Jason Ault and his debate skills. But I enjoyed it. It was fun enough that when John offered, I did not hesitate to say, yes, let me find a partner. And Joey stepped up to the plate with me.
Yeah, it's so much fun. John, you put out so much content, including the Director's Cut series with aforementioned Jason Ault there, too. There's so much happening on your channel that, folks, we definitely recommend you checking it out because of just the sheer amount of cool stuff that is going on over there on the They Said We Said YouTube channel. For now, though, I think we're going to call this episode to a close. So not only do I want to thank you, John, for coming onto the show with us, but I also want to thank my co-hosts for joining me as well. If any of our listeners would like to get in touch with one of us, where can they find us all? Matt?
You can find me on the Twitters at Mathimus55, MathImus55.
And Dana?
You can find me on the Twitterbirds at Dana Roach, and you can hear me twice a week on my other podcast, CMDR Central.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me at Joseph M. Schultz on Twitter. Special thanks to our editor for the show, Ken Peddle, also known as Kenneth Norn. You can follow him on Twitter at Loader. That's LOAD3R. Follow EDH Rec and the cast on Facebook and Twitter. And you can contact us at EDHRecCast@gmail.com. Plus, you can find us on iTunes. And if you do, please consider leaving us a review to help other folks find the podcast as well. And to our listeners, we'd love to know which commanders scare you the most when you see them across the table. And is it because of how they play and their strategy? Or is it because they have some creepy artwork? What are you most afraid of this Halloween? Let us know. This cast is posted every week on EDH Rec's Community Content Spotlight section, where we feature as many other content creators as we can, from Command Zone to Commander's Brew to Commander Versus, not to mention new articles published every day by our own fantastic team of writers. We'll be back at you next week with more data and insights, but until then, remember, EDH Rec your deck before you wreck your deck. Have a good Halloween, everyone.
We have an early podcast, John, where throughout the course of the show, Matt attempts to sprinkle as many Nickelback lyrics into his answers to questions as possible. And I throw as many Avril Lavigne things into the same show as possible.
Oh no, I'd forgotten about that, and now I'm worried that you'll reprise it.
I want to be retrospectively fitted into that show, but for me, Barry Manilow.
At this point, I think our audience is—we have an actual audience. I don't know if we can get away.
Fine. It's like playing the meow game from Super Troopers, but with horrible musical reference.
Oh, I'm keen. I mean, Dana did go and make things pretty complicated. So.